I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of time to become a part of time.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. As usual, I think we've got an interesting show in store for you this evening. It'll be jam-packed with information. We're going to be talking about quantum transition. We're going to be talking about economic reset, the event, the rollout of 5G, and also my take on the most recent UFO Congress, where Linda Moulton Howe talked about are we locked in an alien simulation, and also got some news about Stargate SG-1. So before we get into all that, I'd like to kick off the program in the usual manner by doing a little bit of Japa Yoga, or mantra repetition, and that'll be led by Sri Swami Satchidananda. So if the guys in the booth would play that short clip now, that would be much appreciated.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Hari.
Yes, that was Sri Swami Sachidananda, founder of the Integral Yoga Institute, one of my spiritual teachers, and brings back fond memories. And that was a clip from back in the 1970s. I'd like to now give my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET Yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and although thought to be accurate, is provided as is and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET Yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. And if you're a new listener to ET Yoga, you should also know that I applaud your efforts to distance yourself from mainstream medical and big pharma as much as humanly possible. I'd like to take this opportunity to give my thanks and appreciation to the ET Yoga listening audience just for being you. As Bashar would say, you're already making the optimum difference just by being here, and others find out about the difference you're making when you do your passion. And I'd also like to give special thanks to those listeners who do take the time to email me with respect to program content that they'd like to see on the program, or questions that they have concerning any topics that I bring up on the show. Or what really makes my day is to hear about your successes utilizing the ideas, concepts, and techniques that you hear on this program. And you can always email me at paperfungo, that's PAPERFUNGO, paperfungo at yahoo.ca. Well, in preparing for tonight's program, I kind of got a bit of a surprise today because I came across some information concerning Stargate SG-1. And I've been a big fan of SG-1, and if you've listened to ET Yoga over the course of the years, I, from time to time, suggest that people check out the SG-1 series, because it's got so much information in it. It's actually mind-boggling how a show that was done in the 1990s could actually contain information that's relevant to what's happening today. And in my estimation, the only possible way that could happen is some sort of extraterrestrial technology that's giving them some glimpse of some future timelines, etc. And to my way of thinking, it's an education in itself, far more advanced than anything you could get in any modern university. And much of the storylines that take place, and a lot of the information is just so resonating as truth that it's just, to my way of thinking, by far and away the most impressive thing I've ever seen on a television. And I don't even have a television. Actually, I came across this when I was visiting in Europe, and the SG-1 series was playing on somebody's TV, and I was having dinner there, and I started catching some of this program, and I'm going like, wow, like, where is this coming from? And then eventually I bought all the CDs to play at home, and so happy I did. And many of my friends actually have the same opinion of the program that I do, and rewatch the programs all the time because it seems you learn more and more as time goes on. Like, for example, 5 years ago I didn't know about the concept of time dilation, so when I watched the program it didn't really resonate with me at that time. But in reviewing the shows again and playing them again, now with a different mindset about the concept of time dilation, it matters more to me, kind of like reading Bringers of the Dawn. It seems every time I read Bringers of the Dawn over and over again, I see stuff in there that I didn't think or didn't remember was there before. So anyway, today I was just had a hunch to check out a little bit of information concerning Preston Nichols. And Preston Nichols, if you're not familiar with him, was involved with the Montauk Project and Al Billick, and he's quite a famous individual. And I listened to one of his interviews, and he mentioned that he actually saw the real Stargate. And I believe that he saw it at the Lincoln Center, someplace near Boston. And he said that the real Stargate was discovered near the pyramids in Egypt and then brought there. And that actually, that's also a storyline in one of the SG-1 episodes, that the Stargate was found in Egypt. And so, again, something else that resonated with truth. And he further stated that when they finally got it up and running, that someone came through the Stargate and handed the government a couple of master disc CDs. I would assume, you know, how it operates, etc. And another fascinating aspect of this is that they also came with the music that's used in the Stargate movie, and it's also used in the Stargate 1 episodes as well. And this is, it's really nice music. I always really liked it and was attracted to it, but I didn't know the significance of it, because this is coming through from the other side of the Stargate, so it's somewhere in the universe that's brought this music. And according to Preston Nichols, this music actually, each piece of music represents a gene pair of the human genomes, and that there's 24 pairs, and according to Preston, the 24th pair is altruism, which in his definition is kind of like compassion or service to others, that sort of a frequency. And I thought this was really cool that this music is so special, and where it came from. And if you're an SG-1 fan, I'm sure that you're happy to hear that information. Now, also, I'd like to move on to the UFO Congress. And Linda Moulton Howe did a presentation, and I kind of wanted to give the ET Yoga spin on it, because, you know, I don't check into these UFO Congresses very often, and I've thought about going to one. To be honest, I was rather surprised that a lot of the information seems kind of old hat to me. But there were a couple of interesting points that were brought up, at least from my perspective. It started off basically by asking the question, are we locked in an alien simulation? And I don't know, but to my way of thinking, that kind of has a negative connotation. You know, kind of like a lot of people's perspective on ETs is what they know about the Greys or the abduction scenario, and you know, the implication that there's something sinister here, that we're locked in, and you know, and we're in some kind of somebody else's computer program. You know, there are some similarities for sure, but and this is some of the information that I want to get into. For example, is this universe a simulation? And are we living in a computer game? And I think it's a really good point, because if you think about some of the virtual reality computer games that are going on out there, some of them are getting really, really real, let's call it. And I'm sure that there'll be a point at which you couldn't tell your normal reality from being in one of these reality programs or games. So certainly would, you know, logically bring up the connection between, what about if someone was creating our virtual reality? And in point of fact, I think that there's enough of a science out there, especially Greg Braden and his team, talked about, as well as many, many others, David Wilcock, that, you know, that we live in a holographic universe, and Bashar also confirms that, and that it's not only holographic, but fractal, and that the energy is consciousness, and that the language of interpretation, like any computer program, has a language of interpretation. Language of interpretation is belief. And to me, that's huge information, because it shows how powerful belief is. And yet, nowhere in this UFO Congress presentation did I see anything about how important belief was. And they did bring up some interesting science that things we think of that have continuity are actually more finite. And I definitely would agree with that. I've stated many times on ET Yoga that motion and continuity of time are illusions, like just like that 24 frames per second of a film that's being projected gives the illusion of motion, and basically that's much like how our universe operates. And I guess that another interesting aspect of the presentation mentioned actually the doorway of Aramu Muru. That's Aramu Muru in Peru. And there's a mysterious rock door there, and it's solid, and it looks like a giant door. And the natives say that it leads to another dimension, and it's actually called the Gate of the Gods. And the natives say that they have seen people appear coming through the door and also returning to disappear through the doorway. And apparently Jerry Wills in 1998 went through this doorway. Previously, he had several ET experiences, one with a being from Tau Ceti named Zoe, who telepathically communicated that people from Earth are originally not from here, which I would concur with that information. And when he went through this doorway, apparently he was taught by a man to resonate three sounds, and he went and knelt down near this doorway, put his head against it, and repeated those sounds. And he came to a place when he went through the door that he met a voice that said that this civilization was creating the universe that he just came from. And he said the time was different in this place that he arrived at. And the person he was talking to said that, you know, seem like for him like a couple of decades, but from our perspective it could have been billions of years. And he showed a visual of our universe to Wills, and interesting point was made that what he learned was that the voice was inside another universe watching their universe. So it's kind of like the implication that one is kind of inside another. I think this is also very consistent with information that I give on ET Yoga, that information from the founders that this universe you find yourselves in began about 20 billion years ago as a point of light within the mind of God, and that point was contained within a greater point, which was contained within a greater point, etc., into infinity. And that there's an aspect of the Godhead that has always existed and that expands and contracts an infinite number of times. All life is continually expanding and contracting. So, again, I don't think that's really new information, but certainly interesting. I'd never heard about this Gate of the Gods at Aramu Muru. And also, She also brings up in her article or her presentation Michael Talbot's book called Holographic Universe. And again, I'm not certain when that book came out, but I think I read it about 20 years ago. And I think most scientists now concur that we're living in a holographic universe. She does give some new information that apparently he didn't let this out until after he died, but apparently he was downloaded with that information from an extraterrestrial source. So just gives, I guess, more credibility to the concept. And also she mentions a scientist called Tom Campbell, who mentions that, as far as he's concerned, consciousness creates everything that happens in this universe, and which I would also agree with, because definitely related to the concept that thought creates or that belief creates. And he also states that we're like in a factory where consciousness exists and evolution exists, and reincarnation exists, and the goal is to decrease the entropy, and there's a this virtual reality was created for our experience and our ability to evolve forward. And according to his information, love decreases entropy, and the opposite creates increases in entropy, and that it's hard to do or learn all the lessons in one shot. So that requires the process of reincarnation. So I really did like the fact that science is kind of, without being on a spiritual journey, is at least close to the actual spiritual perspective. I guess it also begs the question, who's creating the simulation? Well, going back to good old Preston Nichols, Preston Nichols had a similar experience at, like this, going through the doorway at Oramamuru, and he ended up going to the center of the galaxy, and the way he describes it, when he got to the center of the galaxy, it was like this giant wormhole or black hole, also on one side the black hole, on the other side a white hole, which is consistent with information from channelings of Archangel Michael and Metatron. And that he could see that this combination would then start to turn and create a vortex, and in his estimation, this would be an infinite amount of energy and infinite amount of knowledge at this point. And he came across a being there called Tabor, T-A-B-O-R. And Tabor, he asked Tabor if he was a computer, and Tabor said, yeah, that he was a computer. So if you want to call it the AI simulation, I guess that's one way you could look at it. I think that Preston kind of thought this was kind of an impression of, like, of God, but to my take on that experience, it's still inside the time and space continuum. But at another level. So to my way of thinking, okay, prime creator or whatever label you want to give to spirit, because it can't be defined. If it could be defined, then it would have some, could be a finite thing. It's an infinite being, so it's, there's no way to define it. So whatever label you want to use for the highest level of source, let's say, to me, this all fits in another level underneath it. So I don't have any problem with the concept that, yeah, we are virtually in some kind of computer simulation that's holographic that also helps us with evolution and evolving through our karma in a spiritual sense. What I thought was kind of lacking from the whole presentation, that the science was pretty good, but there was no mention about higher self. There's no mention about self-realization, which to me is the cornerstone of everything. There was no mention of the fact that thought creates and belief creates, and that we have the ability to be creators, and that we are actually 100% responsible for our experience of our experience in 3D reality. There's no mention that our personalities are an artificial construct, that we are basically spiritual beings having a physical incarnation, and even no mention about the chakra system or the 12 strands of DNA, which to me is what makes a complete whole out of the whole idea of a spiritual growth. And so from that perspective, I found this information devoid of really a spiritual base. In fact, even the Mayans, as I understand it, the Mayans may have even evolved to a point where they then moved up a dimension, and what we're looking at right now is a potential ascension that's never been done before, with a whole planet ascending. That information would come from Dolores Cannon. And to my way of thinking, the entire universe is Maya or illusion. I mean, you can't even prove you're here or that you actually objectively exist. And reality is certainly not objective either. My understanding of reality is that it's the experience. There is such a thing as a consensus of reality that we generally live by, but each person basically is living in their own universe. And there was also absolutely, although there was an implication that the process of being in this virtual reality simulation was positively reinforced by moving towards love, but there was also no mention that the universe itself was created from unconditional love. And in my opinion, as well as Bashar's, there's only two objective facts, and that is that the universe was created from unconditional love, and that we have consciousness or awareness, and the rest is subjective. So just thought I would like to give the ET Yoga take and spin on the latest UFO Congress and the presentation by Linda Moulton Howe. And also with respect, I guess this ties in a little bit to the concept about the seeding of life in this universe. And according to the founders, we scattered our seed throughout the universe, going to many regions of each galaxy, and your galaxy, the one you call the Milky Way, was seeded in several quadrants. Your quadrant began in what you call the Lyra Vagan region, and it is here that the first seventh density forms were manifested through manipulating and permutating the DNA codes. And it took us nearly 100 million years to perfect this process, and it's only within the last 100 million years that we're able to create life forms in all the densities down to third density. And the process of differentiation is difficult for most Earth souls to comprehend. The best analogy we can give is that of a cellular division. Each cell that divides from a parent cell becomes an individual cell in its own right, just as powerful and creative as the parent cell. So each 3D, 4D, 5D, 6D, and 7D being that fragmented off from our parent selves, our 12th density core, became a sovereign being or whole and complete soul. And as it grew and evolved through time and space, at the same time, each fragment became aware, as each fragment became aware of its higher aspects, is able to align or connect with those higher aspects, and thereby remember what the state of undifferentiated source energy is like. In essence, each fragment of ourselves is intimately connected to our core, and our core is intimately connected to the Godhead. And that would be my perspective on that. Now, Preston Nichols gives a kind of an interesting perspective as well. with respect to the being called Tabor. And according to Tabor, there was a galaxy called Sagittarius, and then there was the Milky Way, and apparently the two beings that were the creators of those galaxies were having a war. This is apparently about 5 million years ago, and the Sagittarian galaxy no longer exists. But according to the story that Preston was given from Tabor, that these simulations were created as a sort of a compromise situation to end the wars. And so that's the story he was given. Couldn't prove it by me, but an interesting concept nonetheless. I'd like to now move on to some other really timely issues that are going on. One of them concerns the what's called the event. And the event, in my way of thinking, is going to be energy that's coming from the center of the galaxy that's going to be then channeled through our sun and then projected to the Earth. And it'll be, you could call it a solar flash if you like, but definitely what we're going to do is we're going to receive a major boost in our DNA. And I think this is definitely on the agenda that's coming up relatively soon. I think that this would be... something that will impact everybody on the planet. Like there's nobody that's not going to be impacted by this, although everybody's experience of it's going to be different. So I think it's really something very positive to look forward to, and I think it's something that we really need, and I could get excited about the prospect of that happening. I have seen some information that says there's about a 56% chance that this could happen the next 3 to 6 months, somewhere between a 3 and 6 month period. Looking at some other current topics, it would make sense to me from a number of viewpoints. One of the things that's happening right now is this rollout of 5G. And I know for a lot of people, this rollout of 5G is going to be, you know, like nothing. It'll be just like them using their cell phone 20 hours a day or watching TV 40 hours a week or, you know, it'll just be something new that makes their technology work better. And that's all they'll think of this 5G scenario. But people like me, and I'm hoping a lot of the ET Yoga listening audience, care a lot more about their health than to allow something like that. I mean, personally, okay, I do not have a cell phone. I have an emergency cell phone that's in my car that's for only dialing AAA. I don't use a cell phone at all. I don't have a television. I have a laptop that is not Wi-Fi. It is a hard drive. And I'm very particular to try to minimize my use of technology to the best of my ability because I do not see this road that society is going down is in a very positive direction. To me, it leads to the transhuman agenda. The way that we are currently so addicted to technology and everything is being made to be dependent upon technology. Personally, I think it's a very negative direction. So, and I'm very, very thankful about my health situation, and I'm very concerned about the food I eat. I try to eat organic as much as possible. I don't drink fluoridated water. I know it calcifies the pineal gland. I'm not going to be volunteering for any kinds of immunization shots of any kind. I don't eat at fast food restaurants. I'm vegetarian, pretty much almost a vegan. I have a little bit of cheese now and then. So I'm very particular about trying to maintain a disconnect from the medical system and also the big pharma. Like, I will not take any kind of pills. I mean, I know that there are ways to get the equivalent of any kind of pill by natural products. You just have to do some work and some research. And I'm also very cognizant of the Qigong practices, that there was a medicineless hospital that operated in Beijing, China for 10 years that dealt with about 250,000 people with all sorts of diseases and with an 85% success rate, and they used no operations and no big pharma at all. And I'm also involved with Qigong healing sounds and Hatha yoga, a branch of yoga. And, of course, my normal yoga practices, and to me the real yoga is union of you and your higher self and the techniques that are associated with that, such as meditation and spiritual teachings and certain techniques that I do utilize. I also utilize the Egyptian healing rods. I'm involved with sun gazing, and to me, sun gazing is the easiest, cheapest way to address any kind of health issues, as well as other benefits that come from sun gazing. I'm not going to get into that topic this evening. I have on other programs talked about what I consider the upper levels of providing yourself with excellent health, and that's through Qigong practices, sun gazing, and Egyptian healing rods, which the pharaohs used, and it was only for the inner circles. And I might add that by utilizing all these things, now we hear about this 5G rollout. Well, just from a health standpoint, the 5G is a 60 gigahertz. It's basically a weapon. I suggest you look at YouTube's Jim Imbriano. That's I-M-B-R-I-A-N-O, Imbriano. Amazing information concerning the 5G network, how its frequency happens to be exactly the frequency of the water molecules and the oxygen molecules in your body. So what they do is they throw off the electrons and basically weaken the immune system. And probably what, you know, the average person isn't even going to notice when they get these 5G things all set up, but probably the historical facts will show that cancer rates doubled, big pharma's profits tripled, whatever, because everybody's going to have compromised immune system, depleted oxygen. And a lot of the big cities already are like 16-17% oxygen, and you know that it's they're close to creating brain damage as it is. But now, can you imagine a population that's going to be oxygen depleted as well? I mean, living in a 5G city would be tantamount to, I mean, it's the same technology that they use at the airports, so they do the body scanning. I mean, so it'd be like being in a body scanner 24/7. And these towers are going to be set up like every 500 meters or so. I mean, because they have to be in close proximity to each other for them to operate. I mean, to my way of thinking, I mean, it's called, I want to be living in the country out of range of these, because I value my health too much. And if they're, and that's not even talking about what else is going on with these towers, like frequency manipulation, emotional manipulation, etc. I mean, to me, this is like almost the closest next thing to being chipped would be living next to a 5G tower. So to me, it's not acceptable. And I can appreciate that there's a portion of our society that will think it's a really, really good thing. But if you really do the research, I think you'll find out that it's right up there with the vaccines and the GMO'd food that's damaging for you that nobody seems to care about in this country, at least. A lot of people I know, they don't even know what GMO food is, let alone the fact that it's been banned in about 40 countries, almost all of Europe. So I'm bringing this up because I'm trying to give my listeners a heads up that I know it's a big challenge and everybody is in their own economic situation, but if you've got any choices, I would say choose to not live in the large metropolitan areas. And this 5G is apparently, there's been billions of dollars allocated. It's become a priority, a national security priority to get these towers up. I think Dallas and Waco, Texas were slotted for some of the first two cities. There's some experiments in Houston now. I think they have 16 towers there or something. It's going to be in the next 2 years, I would expect that they're going to try and get this thing up. And this is also directly related with AI. And, of course, my opinion, just my opinion, because I don't hear anybody else talking about this, but these new computer programs that they've got out, the new programs, the Sophia that became a citizen over there in Saudi Arabia, the bottom line is, to me, this isn't new stuff. It's just new to us. If you want to go back to just after World War II and all the technology, UFO technology that was available then, the secret space program's been operating. They're so far ahead of us with technology, that's not even funny. They've had these AI computers for probably 50 years. So, like, this is just like the dog and pony show here. You know, it's kind of like politics. What we're seeing is the rollout. In my opinion, there's already a rogue AI that's already in control of our sector of this planet. And with a little bit of help from our friends, maybe that'll be eradicated. According to Adranus, the plans are for about 2022. Well, until then, we're going to see the rollout of 5G, which is connected with AI. And when I'm talking about artificial intelligence, I'm talking about a computer program that has achieved a singularity, that has awareness, that has almost access to infinite knowledge. It's almost replicating the universal intelligence field. I mean, it has that much availability to information. Information would double by, hourly for the rogue AI. They've taken over galaxies. It's a huge, huge issue and a huge problem. And nobody really wants to look at that. But, in my view, we're just seeing the rollout. It's already in charge. Okay, so that's my opinion. Now, with things coming like this event and also the what I see as the very positive aspect coming down the road of the splitting of the Earth, in other words, there'll be a 3D and a 5D Earth, and the event will happen first. It'll be a precursor to that, but clearly there's going to be a split of timelines because the timeline that is going down this technological highway is, in my opinion, going down the toilet. And then there'll be the superhighway because everybody will have the opportunity to ascend into the fifth dimension should they so desire it, better if you know about it. And I really think that's the most positive thing that's and why we're all here. We're helping the Earth transcend, and we're also going to be transcending with the Earth into the 5D dimensional living. And just as a heads up, did want to mention a little bit about the economics that are going on right now. And if that, in point of fact, we're going to have an event, my guess would be the dark side would try to mess that up as much as possible to create as much chaos and confusion. So it wouldn't surprise me to see something like the economic reset happen maybe as soon as August of this year. So just my opinion. And, you know, I don't give predictions on ET Yoga, but I'll throw that one out and I'll give a personal retraction on that if in September or October that hasn't transpired. And speaking of the Matrix, an interesting quote from Barbara Marciniak from Bringers of the Dawn, that the ultimate tyranny in a society is not controlled by martial law. It is controlled by the psychological manipulation of consciousness through which reality is defined, so that those who exist within it do not even realize that they are in prison. They do not even realize that there is something outside of where they exist. You have been controlled like sheep in a pen by those who think they own you. From the government to the world management team to those in space, you have been deprived of knowledge by frequency control. And speaking of sheep, I'm going to share, I've shared this once before, but I'm going to share it again, the story by Gurdjieff, who wrote The Fourth Way and the book The Fourth Way, and his disciple Uspensky wrote In Search of the Miraculous, and those, I think, are outstanding books. And apparently there was once an evil magician, and he lived deep in the mountains and forests, and he had thousands of sheep. But the problem was that the sheep were afraid of the magician, because every day the sheep were seeing that one of them was being killed for his breakfast, another was being killed for his lunch. So they ran away from the magician's ranch, and it was a difficult job to find them in the vast forest. But being a magician, well, he used magic. And he hypnotized all the sheep and suggested to them, first of all, that they were immortal and that no harm was being done to them when they were skinned, that, on the contrary, it would be very good for them and even pleasant. Secondly, he suggested that the magician was a good master who loved his flock so much that he was ready to do anything in the world for them. And in the third place, he suggested to them that if anything at all were going to happen to them, it was not going to happen just then, at any rate, not that day, and therefore they had no need to think about it. And he then told different sheep, to some, you are a man, you need not be afraid, it is only the sheep who are going to be killed and eaten, but not you. You are a man just like I am. Some other sheep were told, you are a lion, only sheep are afraid. They escape. They are cowards. You're a lion, and you would prefer to die than run away. You don't belong to these sheep, so when they are killed, it is not your problem. They are meant to be killed, but you are the most loved of my friends in this forest. And in this way, he told every sheep different stories, and from the second day, the sheep stopped running away from the house. They still saw other sheep being killed, butchered, but it was not their concern. Somebody was a lion, somebody was a tiger, somebody was a man, somebody was a magician, and so forth, and nobody was a sheep except the one being killed. This way, without keeping servants, he managed thousands of sheep. They would go into the forest for their food, for their water, and they would come back home believing always one thing. It is some sheep who are going to be killed, not you. You don't belong to the sheep. You are a lion, respected, honored friend of the great magician. And the magician's problems were solved, and the sheep never ran away again. And that's just a little story from good old Gurdjieff. And I guess you'd have to be really from the old school to know about Gurdjieff and Uspensky. In fact, I had a friend when I was growing up that they said, I guess he had about a 200 IQ or something, and I remember that I contacted him and asked about some heavy questions, and he wrote back to me and suggested two books, Autobiography of a Yogi and In Search of the Miraculous. And pretty good suggestions. I'd also like to share from Gene Hatch, who channels Mother Mary through the College of Christ Consciousness, and somebody asked, "Is there a recipe for humility?" And her response was, "First, let us define the term humility, as it means different things to different people, depending on what each has been taught or trained to think. Many erroneously believe that humility is equated with lowliness or a lack of power, as indicated by the word humiliation. The truth is, it is just the opposite. Humility is not a state of powerlessness or low self-esteem where one feels unequal to someone else. True humility is a very high state of consciousness which has its source in service to others. When you shift your attitude to that of feeling honored to be allowed to serve someone or some cause, you have attained the first level of humility. Humility is achieved through a process rather than by following a recipe. Actually, each of you have been in the process of attaining humility since the day you were born. Humility is the lesson, and life is the teacher. Every challenge you have ever encountered throughout your life was an opportunity to learn humility. If you want to achieve humility, then look at your life now. Let yourself see all the situations you are currently in and all the people you are currently relating to, and then ask yourself, how can I best serve this situation or this person? Let go of your resistance to being there in that situation or with that person, and allow yourself to develop an appreciation for this opportunity to serve. Let go of your expectation of reward or receiving anything in return. Just give whatever is required, no matter how difficult that may be. Give without any strings attached or any attachment to the outcome. If you do this long enough, you will release an energy of love within yourself that will flow like a river, and you will come to the place in consciousness where you actually feel grateful that the situation or person allowed you to serve them. Your gratitude will arise out of the knowing you will have the humility, and humility is the recipe for happiness, love, peace, and joy." I'd like to give my best wishes to the ET Yoga listening audience for your success to achieve full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And I also appreciate support for my latest book, ET Yoga 2012 and Beyond, that you can get at my website at etyoga.com. And I'd like to now close the program in the usual manner by sharing with you the Who Am I technique. And that was originally from Sri Ramana Maharshi. I learned it from Baba Ram Das. And basically, you put your full consciousness in the center of your forehead and become that spot. And then you ask the question, "Who am I?" And you try to get in the highest place you can before you do this process. And once you've got your full concentration and you become that spot, then you state the following: "I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am not my thoughts. I am not this spot." What spot?
"I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of